Welcome to the Smichael Speaks podcast channel. I'm Joanne Smichael, and I'm delighted that you tuned in for relevant leadership learning that will help you continue to soar. Enjoy this episode. This is the inaugural episode of Spirit at Work, and it's really special to me for lots of reasons. First, because of the guest. Dr. Reed Spearman is someone I know from lots of different spheres of my life. First, I knew him as a doctoral student. Then as a fellow alum of Fielding Graduate University. And finally, as a committed community servant. He serves on the board of Bridges to Housing Stability. He's a leader in his congregation at Catonsville Presbyterian Church and is always available to help the underserved. Welcome, Reed.
Thank you, Joanne. It's a pleasure to be here.
So you know I'm excited. So the second reason I'm excited about this episode and this new series is because it's new and interesting. I got to keep trying to keep these podcasts fresh, kind of interesting. So my faith governs so much of my life, and I want to explore how other people operationalize faith, no matter what their faith is, and specifically in the work and in the larger world. But before we talk about Spirit at Work, will you share a little about your career trajectory? I know that you do something, you're involved in quality management in the federal sector, but I cannot articulate what it is nearly as well as you can. So just fill us in.
Well, my career has been varied. I've worked most of my life, starting in my teens, working my way through a private high school or to help with the tuition of that. And then through my college years, always working, you know, getting grants, but always working. So I have a varied career. I began working with quality related issues in the 90s. When I started as the information technology manager for a small manufacturing company in downtown Atlanta. And the company decided it wanted to get registered to an international quality standard, ISO 9001. And they looked around and said, well, who can do that? And essentially, Reed, you've got the bandwidth, you can do this. So I ran the quality system. I wasn't the quality manager at the time. We had a quality manager, but I ran the quality system. I did all the paperwork and kept all the files and all. Back then, the standard was very paperwork intensive, and there was tons of binders and all sorts of paperwork. So that was my introduction into the field of quality. And then I moved on to be a software tester for a small company, again, quality related. And then moved into a big company called Cyber, was a quality engineer there for a few years, then became the quality manager there. And I've had manager in my title since, I think, 2007. And what I do right now, I work for a small woman-owned federal contractor in Columbia, Maryland. And our primary business is in data management. And if I zero down a little bit more, it's in health data management. We work with large agencies like the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services and the FDA. We have other clients as well, but health has sort of been where we've made our mark. And my responsibilities are to maintain the registrations and ratings to the various international and national standards that this company has. For example, ISO 9001, which is a standard for quality management systems. There's several other ISO standards, and also CMMI, which is a standard related to project management. I am a certified project manager and have been since 2006. I'm also a certified manager of quality and organizational excellence since 2015. I have a master's degree in quality assurance, and of course, I have my doctorate in organizational development and change.
So varied, varied career.
Well, I should also throw in that in the early 80s, I spent a little bit of time on Capitol Hill working for a congressman as a staff assistant, and then about 2 or 3 years working for the U.S. Senator from Georgia. So I've done a lot in my career.
I didn't know that. I didn't know you worked on the Hill.
I did.
You never told me that.
I lived in D.C., actually. I lived way on Lincoln Park, which is way out East Capitol and 16th Street, getting close to what used to be RFK. I used to walk to work because I worked in the Longworth House office building for
Ah.
the congressman from my hometown, from my area, my district back in Georgia. And I also, well, that was then. And also, in addition to being quality manager, actually technically my title is corporate quality team lead. I'm really the director of quality here at this company. But I also part-time, I teach at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County. I'm an adjunct faculty member there, and I teach quality management.
And you love it. You glow when you talk about your teaching.
Love it. I
Yeah.
do.
Yeah, that you're just gifted. And I think it's wonderful that you're walking in your multiple purposes. I want to talk a little bit about your life as a community servant, because that's a big part of who you are. So, what's that like? What does it entail? What are your involvements? I know that you are past chair and current vice chair of the Board of Directors of Bridges to Housing Stability in Columbia, Maryland. What other community service activities are you involved in?
I'll, well, that's a thank you for the question. I'm struggling with a little bit because community service has just been so much a part of my entire life. I think part of that is because my parents had the value of community service and they instilled that into me as a young child. And I have been working in lots of different community service organizations for a very long time. Back in Georgia, I moved to Maryland in 2012 for a job. Back in Georgia before I moved here, I spent 20 years working for Kiwanis International, which is an international service organization. And I served in every office of the club, and I even served the division of the entire district of Georgia as a lieutenant governor there. So lots of community service projects. Our club had the Fayette County Fair. That's how we raised money
I
to
love
give
it.
to the community. We were the local fair operators at the annual fair every year. I also served, I helped with the Humane Societies for about 2 years, I think, helped with the Humane Society's pet adoption program. And then I decided I wanted to serve on their board, or they asked me if I'd be interested, and I said yes. And I was elected to serve as their treasurer, but that's when the job situation changed for me in 2012, and I wasn't able to serve a term on the Humane Society. But that was one of my community service activities. I, of course, have been involved in church work, church activities for a long time. Here in Maryland, a couple of unusual things in as far as community service, because it stretched outside of the congregation of the church, and that was the Envision Board program. One of our former members, a member who passed away, left a significant amount of money to the church. The church was very wise in the way they chose to spend it. They set up a fund. And they make grants from that fund for mission and for community service and for social justice. They spend the interest on the corpus of that investment, that tremendous donation. And I served on that board for 3 years, and that went outside the congregation. So it was local, state, local, national, and international programs could receive funds from that program. Be in a process, and people would apply, and we'd review their applications, and then grant the funds. And their grant money was, not loans, but grant money. So that was a service project I was involved in that went outside of our congregation. I also was involved and still involved in the Stephen Ministry. Stephen Ministry is mostly in the United States, but in other countries as well. Stephen Ministry is a ministry inside most congregations, or the congregations that become Stephen Ministry congregations. And they train members of the congregation to minister to other members of the congregation or other members. They don't have to be members of the congregation. They can be outside the community. So they train them to essentially to listen to them, to be with them in times of stress and trouble. It is not a counseling program. We are not counselors and Stephen ministers, not by any means any professional, health. Health workers, but we are taught how to reflectively listen, and and how not to make dumb comments when people are in pain. That's the sort of thing that you have to go through 50 hours of training to become a Stephen minister. And I am still a Stephen Minister. I was a Stephen Minister leader in the program. I helped organize that program in our church, but I had to step back from that when I started teaching. I needed some room to be able to do to grade papers and to do the things that are necessary for teaching. So I had to step back from being a leader, but I'm still a minister in the program. Another organization I've been involved in, I was for about 4 years, I served as a Toastmaster. Toastmasters, I still consider that to be a service organization because although when you become a Toastmaster, a lot of the benefit is to yourself, to get over fear of public speaking, to become a better public speaker. It's useful in a lot of respects. It can be useful in your job. It can be anywhere that you need to communicate with people. That program can be useful. But because of the impact that better speakers have on the larger community, I still consider that to be service. And I served as president of my local Toastmasters club for 2 years. So I've been involved in lots of projects that I will see. Emergencies that happen, like giving money to disaster assistance. I've given money to the Presbyterian Disaster Assistance Program. So when I see a service project and I feel called to participate in it, I can give money, I can give time. So I've worked on things other than just organized programs as well. And it all stems from the fact that I really feel like that service is an important value. And I would hope, I would want that value to be taught to younger people so that we can continue to minister to each other, to help each other, because we're all interconnected.
We are, we are, we are, we are. So this series is Spirit at Work, and I see how you live it in your community life. But before we go much further, I want to be sure we're on the same page. Tell me what the terms faith and spirituality mean to you.
I think probably the definition that I resonate with the most, it comes from the Bible, what I consider to be the scriptures, and it's in the book of Hebrews, and it says something to the effect of the faith is the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things not seen. And for me, for example, I can't see God. I don't see God with my eyes, but I have faith that God exists. I have faith that God loves me. I have faith based upon my experience. I see God working in my life. God has been wonderful to me in my life. I've been so blessed. And I see that happening in my life. So that, for me, that is faith. It is understanding that there's something there that can't be touched, can't be empirically proven, but is still powerful and still works both in my life and then in the life of others.
How about spirituality? What does that mean to you?
Well, for me, that it's a little different because faith is a really personal thing. Faith is really personal to me. Spirituality for me is a little bit broader concept. That's more the concept that you recognize that anybody can be spiritual if they're recognizing that there's something outside themselves, something larger, something greater. And that's more to life than what can be sensed, what can be touched and smelled and seen. And it's also, we're all part of something larger. We're all connected. It's a greater, the sense of the divine, something large, something that connects us all. So for me, spirituality is a kind of a a broader concept. And then inside spirituality, I feel like faith fits inside spirituality.
That's cool. I never heard it put like that. So, where do those two things, faith and spirituality, come to the fore in your leadership?
My leadership style is what I would call situational, and it sort of depends on the people that I am leading. It depends on their maturity level. So, for example, if the people I am leading are not really willing and not really able to do the job, I have to be much more directing in my leadership. much more monitoring and controlling of activities. Whereas if the people I'm leading are willing and able, then I'm much more coaching. I'm much more, right? They don't need me to monitor and control them. I don't have to micromanage people who are capable of doing what they are supposed to be doing and want to do it. So with this situational leadership, where faith comes into that is the realization that it goes back to the spirituality. We're all connected. And I need to understand those connections between the people that I am leading. Hopefully it's a two-way street. We're connected and their understanding goes both ways. How are we connected? W. Edwards Deming is a very famous seminal author and thinker in the quality discipline. He is the gentleman who is essentially responsible for the fact that the automobile industry in Japan just grew and exploded in the 80s because he went over there and taught them much about quality management. And so we were talking about, oh, the connection. One of the things Deming said was, which was anathema to business leaders at the time, was that they needed to consider psychology. They needed to understand how people work, how people think, what people need, what people need, and they had to work with the needs of people because if they help them self-actualize, if they help them meet their own needs, that in turn would benefit the company. And at the time, that was a very foreign philosophy. Well, for me, that's the way I do leadership. It's I need to understand. I need to treat people, like human beings. I need to have relationships with these people that I'm working with. So that relational piece is where the spirituality, I think, fits in.
So the workplace can be difficult. It can be contentious. It can be divisive. Sometimes it can be toxic. It can also be healthy and wholesome and affirming and supportive. Where do you find support, speaking of support, from like-minded, like-hearted people who maybe share your sense of faith in the workplace?
I am fortunate here in this company. This is the sixth federal contractor that I have worked for in my career over the 20 plus years. And here at this company, I actually have several good friends who are also people of faith, and we are able to talk very openly together about faith and about our challenges at work. And we have even prayed together here at work. Not something that we advertise at this point. It's much more kind of behind closed doors still because the workplace is. I think that the pandemic broke the back of traditional business practices.
Yeah, for
And
sure.
we are seeing so many changes. And one of those changes is a much greater latitude, a much greater freedom of expression than we ever used to have before. So things are possible now that were just not considered to be acceptable, not allowed in the doors. And being able to meet, in ones and twos, it's not like I go out during the lunch and preach the gospel. I'm not doing that here, but I am able to talk to people of like mind, and we are. It's a wonderful. It's like being in church. It's a connection. It's community. It's sharing those same values, and we don't always agree on every point, of course. But overall, sharing those same values and just being able to it's a communion in a way. It's really a communion. And when you have that in the business place, I'm quite certain that that's helped my blood pressure go down.
Sure.
I think I'm able to it's increased my resilience to resist the kind of pressures that we have in business, the deadlines and some of the personalities that don't work well together. As you said earlier, it can be very challenging. And having that kind of relationship with people of faith in the same company is really helpful. I just really couldn't, it's hard to put a value on it. It's just I depend on it.
So as you reflect on your career, has it been relatively easy to find spiritual allies or faith allies in the workplace?
No. I will say it is getting easier. I feel like that it's becoming more acceptable to be able to talk about faith in the workplace, but it's not always been that way. And because I have worked for a while, I'll have to say earlier in my career, no, the way you would connect is at the water fountain, or in the hall or at lunch, and you would hear people talk about their lives, about what they're doing. And then you would get sort of the sense of, oh, maybe this person is also a person of faith. And you could ask questions. And so sort of very tentative probing, but then you could develop a relationship that way, but not really outspoken, and very public at that point. So it hasn't been easier. And I have been very fortunate at this company where I'm working now, that there are quite a few people of faith here, and I'm able to talk to them. We've even prayed in the office together before, which has been wonderful, and really helped me both physically, and spiritually.
That's cool. So now, different day, different age. It's 2024, almost 2025. Are you comfortable raising your faith and talking about it in business settings? And if you bring it up, how do you do it? A few minutes ago, you said, I don't go out at lunch and preach the gospel. So comfortable talking about it, and how do you bring it up?
More comfortable than I have been in the past, I would still not say I'm completely comfortable doing it. I feel like that there are times when it's appropriate, more appropriate than other times. I also feel like there are times when I think maybe the Spirit of God is leading me into a situation where I need to talk, but we used to say witness, use the word witness.
Witness, yes.
Used to witness, that I need to reach out to someone. But for me, it's never been about, when I was in high school, I was invited by a young lady to come to church with her, and I was just ecstatic. And then I got there and found out that she was just stacking up the numbers. She had invited 15 people, and they had a contest. How many could you get there? So for me, it's not about winning souls in terms of numbers, right? It's about people's needs. It's about what does this person need, and if they're at a place in their life where they might be open to thinking about things, coming to a different understanding than they have previously in their life, and if I can help connect them to a different way of thinking, then I'm happy to do that. But I have to say, I'm probably still a little guarded. I'm guarded both because I still don't want to be rejected. I wouldn't want somebody to react negatively to that. But also because it's still like if the senior management, heard that that kind of thing was going on, I think they would still be uncomfortable with it. They would want it to happen off-site.
Okay, I get that. I get that. I've had moments like that in my consulting career where I have prayed with people because they needed prayer. And I don't know what the leadership would have thought, but the person needed prayer. So what you gonna do? I know that there have been crucible moments in your career. There have been crucible moments in all of our careers. We tell us about one or two and how your faith sustained you and allowed you to get through them.
Very interesting that you'd have that question today, because I'm actually going through a crucible, not just a moment, it's been months. We have a very large, very intensive effort. It's a triannual audit coming up. Only happens every 3 years, and it's hugely expensive in terms of people's time, and it's also expensive in terms of money. And I have been struggling because I really didn't feel like I had enough resources to do the job successfully. And I just finally had to just let it go and just say, God, I cannot do this. I just can't. Although I have a lot of skills, I have a lot of knowledge, I have a lot of education, I just can't make this happen. And so I'm just gonna have to trust you to move in this situation. And for me, that was hard because I'm very self-reliant. I'm very productive at work, and not being able to control the situation was very frustrating, and it sort of paralyzed me initially. And some time went by that I probably should not have let. We were behind the eight ball, but I let it go, and God did move. He's things happened that I didn't initiate, but have made it possible for us to successfully go through this. At this point today, it starts on the 28th, the 20th of this month, which is just a week away, a little bit more than a week away. At this point, I'm not in panic mode any longer. But I attribute that to not just the fact that, I mean, I think God was going to move anyway, but I didn't have to. You don't have to worry. I don't have to worry. And in again in the scripture where the Apostle Paul was always telling people, I want you to get to the place in your faith where you don't worry about anything. I never really understood what that meant until I go through something like this where, oh, that's what that means. When the scripture says that you're supposed to turn everything over to God, it means everything. It doesn't mean the selected set of things in your life. You turn over the things that you can't control, but the things you can control, you don't turn over. So I've learned a lot about how to live life day to day,
I'm
walking in faith.
releasing, yeah,
Yes.
releasing control.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a
Huge blessing.
song I like, Brooklyn Tabernacle Choir. I don't know the correct title to it, but it's "How many times did I show how much I loved you? How many times did I show how much I cared? Didn't I put food on your table?" You know, it's a beautiful song, and what you were just saying reminds me of it. Yeah. So, I'm thinking about switching gears and talking about faith walk and community service. What's the connection between community service and your faith?
Well, in Bridges to Housing Stability, which is an organization in Howard County, and its mission is to eradicate homelessness in Howard County, Maryland. When I began to see the need for a place to live, and how pervasive that is, and how many people don't have a place that they can call home, and then I began to understand through the experiences of our clients at Bridges to Housing Stability. How the many, many varied circumstances that people come through to become homeless, and the majority of them become homeless through no fault of their own. When I realized that was what's happening in the world, these are victims of circumstances, in some cases victims of government policy, victims of societal prejudices and biases. These are people in need. These are people who need help, and they don't just need they need the physical help. Yes, they need a roof over their heads. They need to be able to eat, need to be able to have work and get to work. Those are important things, but there's more to it. And, spirituality tells us there's more beyond what you can sense. They are beings that need other things, other help. And so that's where spirituality comes into service for me, because it is ministering, and I use the word ministry very, very directly. It is ministering to needs beyond the physical. That's where I think spirituality should rightly move into community service to minister to more than just the physical needs of people.
You know that Bridges to Housing Stability was congregations' concern for the homeless for many years, and its roots are, I forgot how many congregations got together, pooled their resources to help the homeless in Howard County.
Yeah, I didn't know that was their origins was churches, and then the program became too large for volunteers to manage, and so they had to hire professional staff.
And isn't that a sad testament to the fact that we got that many more homeless people?
True, and Bridges is only one of many organizations in the county that works on homeless issues. And we're barely scratching the surface of the need.
Surface. So I
And
know you're.
it's also difficult. Waiting lists are long.
Oh my Lord.
The process to get help is very cumbersome. And in my opinion, we're a lot of people are being left by the roadside and not getting the help that they need because the mechanics of providing that help are hard. They're hard.
Yeah. I think one of the things I'd like to do in my retirement or my refirement, because I'm not going to retire, but when I refire, is some kind of work to help people navigate those systems. I don't know what it's going to be, but you know about the situation where we helped the young woman, a group of us, just you included, all banded forces to help a young woman. But what I realized in that is that if you don't have an advocate to help you navigate these systems, who knows some people who know some people, you can just be out there, like truly out there. One of the things I want to talk about, and I know that I've taken a lot of your time, but I still have a couple more things I want to talk about. I know you're comfortable talking about faith in your congregation because that's a no-brainer. Do you talk about it in other areas of your service life, like at Bridges and in the other places where you help out?
I think about that for a moment. I would say probably on very limited basis. We don't really talk about faith issues at board meetings, although I have talked about faith issues with board members outside of board meetings. We had a precious gentleman who was, the reason I became chair of Bridges to Housing Stability was we had an election, and his name's Jim, and he's just a wonderful man. And Jim and I have had many conversations about faith-related things and about his family and my family. And so, I have shared with individual members. So again, more relationally, when you get into the board meeting, it's much more functional. Not that we couldn't talk about those types of issues. We might talk about those types of issues if they're relevant to clients, perhaps, but it's not something that we've done a lot of. I'm trying to think, of course, church is the center of that kind of conversation. I'm trying to think outside of that if there's any other time. I think I would have to say yes, but on a limited basis.
Last thing I want to ask you about is lessons learned about bringing your faith to work, to your service. What are the lessons you've learned? What are the ben You know what? I learned this in one of the qualitative research classes. I'm supposed to ask one question at a time. Okay, so let me ask you one question. What are the lessons you've learned about bringing your faith to work?
First and foremost, that it is appropriate to bring faith to work. That it is helpful. That is helpful both to me and it is helpful to others. I've had this sort of notion that I'm not really sure where it came from or why I thought this. And probably because I am of a certain age, and when I came up, there was a certain ethic, a certain work ethic, and that work ethic, at least in the United States, that kind of branded work ethic, faith and business were totally separate. They were not ever together or considered to be possible to be together. That's been changing. But I think I thought that it just wasn't appropriate. I just shouldn't bring it to work. But it's like leaving myself at home and coming to work as half a person. If you don't come with your full, with all of you, then that's detrimental to you. It's going to be detrimental, I think, to the business that you work in, because you're not bringing all of you to work. And if part of you is faith-based, that needs to be there too.
Yeah, you got to bring your whole self. Yeah, when we think about diversity, part of our diversity is our faith, being Christians. I mean, we talk about all elements of diversity, and I think that there needs to be space for that as well. What are the you now you've led into my next question. What are the benefits of having an integrated self?
The word that comes to mind is peace. It is a more peaceful existence to be an integrated self, because when you're not, there is discontinuity, there's disconnection, there's lack of alignment. There are just things that are happening that are not positive. in your mind, in your spirit, in your, we're multifaceted. And unless all those facets are aligned, which I think you can come closer to alignment when you incorporate faith, I don't think I can be aligned without it. So it's a more peaceful existence. I think it's a healthier existence, physically healthier existence. I think my blood pressure's lower. I still take blood pressure medication, but I don't have the huge, horrible spikes and feeling really bad. When I have it all together and I'm trusting God and I bring faith with me to work, my day just goes better. And also, it's just things seem to. This is not. Well, of course, it's not. I'm a manager, but a lot of things I think and feel are sort of contrary to a lot of management doctrine. I feel like that my work goes better. I feel like it's easier. That's not a good word. It flows. It's just kind of a flow to it that I don't have if I disconnect that part of me and then just mechanically do the tasks. It adds values to me. It adds value. One of the things I think one benefit is it adds value to life. I'm more peaceful. I'm healthier. It just adds value to life.
I like that. It adds value to life. You launched Spirit at Work with me, and I'm so appreciative. I'm appreciative of you sharing your experiences, being vulnerable, because talking about faith and the gospel and the Lord puts you in a vulnerable position. So I thank you for that. I thank you for your insights, for your candor. I also thank you for your friendship. Thank you, Reed.
You are so welcome, and I do value that friendship, Joanne. I do cherish that friendship, so
Thank you.
thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. I hope you got tools that you'll actually use and share. Subscribe if you haven't already. I add new and relevant leadership learning all of the time. If you haven't visited the Smichael Speaks YouTube channel, check it out. There's all sorts of new content. All of this is virtual leadership learning that will help you soar.